Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live over on YouTube. We're live on Crowdcast. We're coming to you later as an audio podcast. Wherever you get your later audio podcast, it's all good. But we have a bunch of great guests for you this evening. Yeah. I'm very excited to bring them in. Very excited to talk to them. So I'll tell you what. Let's cut through
just
the chit-chat.
You're going to jump. Wait, but Alex, you haven't checked in with us. You haven't checked in with me going through. You don't even know what.
Oh, my God. What's going on with you guys?
Yeah, I mean, look at that scary dungeon he's coming from.
I'm in the dungeon, and all I want to do is get the show started, Alex. I don't know why you're wasting time with this chit-chat.
Oh, okay. Well, I was trying to check in with Pete. I was trying to find out what was going on with Pete.
You don't want to.
We don't have time for this, Pete. Yeah. We don't know. You're probably going to talk about Arrow or something. We don't have time for that. Let's get into it.
Pete, who has been identified by our first guest as Stephen King-esque.
Yes. Well, later in the show, and just a note for our guests who are listening to live right now, I originally told them they were coming in first. Unfortunately, we're going to have to switch you and do you second. Leah Kleberman and... oh my gosh, Ryan Silver. Are coming in second here. But first, we are going to bring in Matthew Klickstein, who is the creator and writer of See You at San Diego, an oral history of Comic-Con fandom and the triumph of geek culture. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Hi. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, thank you for coming on. You have a, I would call it, massive tome coming out of Fantagraphics. This is, I mean, I think people can tell from the title how big this is, but this was wild to flip through.
It's big. Yes.
Yeah. It's like going back in time, man. It's glorious.
So it is. I
love this. This is basically like an entire oral history of San Diego. You got these incredible interviews, incredible pictures throughout. I mean, just to take it back to the beginning, you know, we're all obviously as geeks, as nerds, we like been to San Diego. We love San Diego. But where did it start with deciding, okay, maybe I want to do an oral history of this? Because that's decades. I don't know if
it was a lot of work. Yeah. And to be clear, it actually goes back, I would say, even to the 1930s. The first real organized convention, which was a science fiction convention, of course, was the Worldcon in 1939 in New York. And we go all the way back there, even a little bit before that. There's some discussion of Mary Shelley and science fiction and Frankenstein. Really what it is it's an oral history of all of pop culture fandom over the last century. The reason we focused a bit on San Diego Comic-Con is because it gave us a bit of a narrative thrust to talk about the prehistory, history, and then the expansion of what is actually the largest pop culture gathering worldwide. San Diego is not just where they do the Eisners. San Diego is not just considered the Mecca of conventions. Guinness Book of World Records has called it the largest in the last few years. Obviously, since COVID, it's hard to tell now. But that was originally the idea, was this would be a way to tell all of pop culture history of the last century through this kind of cipher of San Diego. Otherwise, it would have been 50,000 pages instead of 500. There's a lot in there, though, that goes way beyond San Diego, way beyond the convention. It talks about other conventions. So it's really about the community that San Diego is kind of the nexus for.
Well, and the other thing that we should probably mention, please correct me if I'm wrong about this, but it really does focus, at least mostly in terms of the interviews and other things, on comic books as well. Like at this point, Comic-Con is this huge amorphous thing that is movies and TVs and video games and anime and manga and
candy.
Video games and candy.
Barbecue. For this is
barbecue. Candy for
food.
Sure.
Barbecue. It's buses. It's cars. It's pizza. Yeah. I could keep going. Anyway, it's a lot of stuff, but you definitely do it through the lens of where it started, which is comic books. So other than loving comic books, why keep it focused on that?
Actually, you know, that's one of the themes and subplots of the book is Comic-Con was never just about comics, ever. It was always in the very beginning, they were bringing in science fiction like Ray Bradbury. There was fantasy, there was toys, there was movies, animation. Very early on, they were bringing in people like June Foray and Bob Clampett from the animation world. There was a special section just for Star Trek as early as 1973, and the con started in 70. It was inspired in part by a festival in Detroit called the Triple Fanfare, which the founder of Comic-Con, Shel Dorff, had been a part of. And it was called Triple Fanfare in Detroit because it was comics, movies and animation, and science fiction. It was not just comics. So Comic-Con was never just about comics. And a lot of the people who created it said that from the beginning. In fact, they asked Jack Kirby if it should just be a traditional comic book convention where really it's a dealer's room, if you think about it back then, or if it should hit all pop culture spheres. And Kirby was the one who told them, do it all. So they did. So it was always about everything. Cool. And that, again, goes back to why I chose it to kind of focus on to tell the pop culture nostalgia, pop culture fandom story of the last century was through that, because so many people came through there. I mean, look, they had Chuck Norris at the 1975 con talking about what really happened to Bruce Lee. They would show martial arts movies. A lot of the people who created Comic-Con were very into martial arts movies and Bruce Lee, both because they appreciated the artistry of it and they were very interested in lots of different things like kung fu movies. But also, if you think about it, Bruce Lee, just like the way that professional wrestlers would later come in, especially in places like Chicago, they were considered like real life superheroes in a way. Bruce Lee is one of the closest that we'll see on screen, right, at least now, to a real life superhero. So that was happening. They had magicians coming in. They had people doing yo-yos. As you said, like the toys and the candy and everything now, that was there in early on, and they intentionally wanted it that way. I even talked with a few of them about why then did they choose Comic-Con as the name, which was a little bit later down the road anyway, because it kept changing, because even San Diego wasn't a very well-known place at the time. And they said there was a lot of discussion about it. So, and real quick to wrap it up too, I will say that that's why even with the book, I didn't want to just focus on comics. I didn't want it to seem like comics was really all that it is. There's so much other stuff to it. There's whole chapters and sections that have nothing to do with Comic-Con or comics at all. Stuff in the 90s about special effects and Jurassic Park, movies like that, Terminator 2. So I really wanted to hit everything. It's not just about comics, and it never was. And I think that's one of the interesting parts of the story, is because a lot of people think, oh, Comic-Con's not about comics anymore. It never was, ever. And so I think that's something that we sort of discuss, from the people who made it happen.
And it's basically the very first internet.
Quickly, because we're looking at a picture of me on screen. I don't know if you recognize.
Wow.
You're the kid in the background?
Yeah.
You wish you looked like that. Come on, dude.
I wish I had that shirt.
That looks sweet.
That picture was actually taken in 2020, believe it or not. Yeah, it was during a food rally. Yeah, comic books there too.
We're looking at a page here, but can we talk about the design of the book as well? Because I love it. It really feels it adds that sort of the photo design and sort of the scrapbook nature of it makes it feel like so authentic and sort of the way it feels to be at Comic-Con, where you're just putting it all together from a bunch of different things you're a fan of.
Yeah, I told the designer from day one that once I saw the proofs that I would always say his name and spell it. It's Jonathan Barley, Barli. He did a remarkable job. You'll see there on the right side, it looks like there's archival folder sections, or the way that he did that on the left. That is the book, or that paperclip over the picture of Jeff Smith, who's one of the people who did forwards. I wanted it to really have a zine DIY type of feel. I'm very fascinated by the zine scene, especially the late 80s, early 90s kind of hardcore punk scene and Riot Girl scene. And just that kind of, the mimeograph, the Xerox, the whiteout, I told even the designer, if we could have some things like you see the highlighter there. Some of the captions are written in, like it looks like they're written in with ink. We wanted to have this real archival feel to it. And at the same time, Jonathan Barley, the designer, had just done a project on punk culture and zine culture. And he showed me some of the work he had done. And we were able to use that as a reference point. As I must say, and one of the reasons I went with them, as a reference point for this kind of design that's a little bit more creative, a little bit more dynamic. We Told You So, the Fantagraphics oral history that came out a couple years ago. And it was actually one of the things that inspired me to want to reach out to Gary and Fantagraphics to do this book. Because I said, if they can do it like that, I would love to do this. Because I've worked with other companies doing oral histories before, including Penguin, with my first big one, the Nickelodeon book. And I kind of knew, especially these days, if I went with a major publisher, like a HarperCollins or Simon Schuster, one of the ones I've worked with before, they wouldn't have given it the same kind of finesse and passion that Fantagraphics and Gary would give. You know, it would have been a 200-page book with maybe, if I'm lucky, you know, a couple pages of black and white inserts of photos in the middle. It wouldn't be this massive friggin' thing that's full color and, yeah, with like, I mean, you know, it's got the, it's a very visually pleasing book, and Fantagraphics is going to do that. Other companies aren't going to, you know, invest that kind of resource into it. So I'm glad I went with them. And Jonathan did a fantastic job.
So now, cool. I think probably the answer is just chip away at them. But when you have a massive amount of interviews like this, decades of material you're sifting through, where do you start when you're putting this story together? How do you start tackling it?
That's a really good question that no one's really asked me before. You know, look, I've done long form oral histories before. As I said, I did the Nickelodeon one for Penguin, which somehow ended up as a clue on Jeopardy a couple weeks ago. I still don't know how that happened.
You love to hear it.
I don't even watch. Yeah, I don't watch Jeopardy, but I was getting all these text messages from friends, and one guy even films or doesn't film, but records every episode, so he filmed the scene. But yeah, so and I've done short form versions of it before as well. I read a lot of oral histories. I love Studs Terkel, James Andrew Miller, who did the great, you know, SNL oral history and a bunch of others. He just did the HBO one. Please Kill Me, obviously, the Legs McNeil book. The guys who did the MTV book did a great job from Spin originally. But and I love documentaries. I love both watching them, and again, I also make them. So, and I saw this as a documentary, as you guys might know. This actually started technically as a podcast series we did with SiriusXM. I originally wanted to do it as a book. We started getting stuff going for it. COVID happened. Suddenly everything was a big mess. And I had a friend who was a producer at SiriusXM and said they were trying to do some more. Let me turn the light on so I actually can see. Do some more original. That's me. Do some more.
Wow, glasses, beard. Oh yeah. Man, great.
So they wanted to do more original content. So I was able to move the project over there just to keep it going, so that we could actually get their interviews done. Like I needed support. I needed help. And so we did it first with the podcast series. That's when I did the interviews and got about 70 hours of material. And then, you know, the podcast series is about 7 hours, called Comic-Con Begins. Just because we did it with Sirius, don't worry, it's free everywhere, so you can find it wherever you'd like. But that was only about 4 or 5 hours of the material, because there was also a lot of music and archival stuff and stuff of Brent Stevens, one of our interviewees, doing some hosting, the kind of interstitial stuff. So I had about 10 times the material left after the podcast series, and I wanted to get it out there. I wanted to go deeper into certain things. I wanted to be able to talk about topics that we did not talk about in the podcast series, including I was interviewing these people during COVID and with the virtual stuff happening and whatnot. So I actually got people to talk about it somewhat in real time. I mean, Kevin Smith is talking in our thing about, you know, what he thinks the future is going to be at Comic-Con after COVID's over. And I think that that's very interesting material that I wanted to get down into historical documentation. So that's here too. As far as where to start, you know, I it's just like anything else. It's where you start a painting or where you start any story.
The corner,
you
know? Right?
Exactly. Right over there. Yeah. Well, what you do is you make sure that you are coordinating the numbers on your painting to what the color on your instructions.
Ones are blue.
The real answer is I just Googled it. You know, what's the start of my book? And it was there. There was actually a lot of
They were like, start at the first.
Yeah. The stuff from Breitbart was really biased, I felt. The point is, no, I just, it's fine. No one's ever asked me that before. Because I guess I've done it so many times before, I just go. And certain, when I'm doing interviews, it really stays in my head. And certain quotes, certain ideas, certain phrases do sometimes inspire me. Like, I'll know, I knew in my Nickelodeon book and I knew in this what the last line was going to be. You know, said it, one of the interviews I did for the Nickelodeon book, I remember hearing it and being like, that's going to be the last line of the book. And so too with this. Funnily enough, it's one of the few interviews that exists with Shel Dorff, the founder of Comic-Con, talking about the importance of sharing when it comes to fandom. And the last line of the whole book is, you know, the story. He tells this funny story, quote unquote, of a fan who saw Godzilla and couldn't talk with anybody about it, so his head exploded. And he just basically is explaining the importance of sharing. And this was actually, he said it at the first Comic-Con, I'm sorry, in 1970, that's where he said it. We had an archival thing of him talking about it. And I just remember hearing it going like, that's the answer to the whole thing. And it's got to end with the founder, Shel Dorff. It starts and ends with, yeah. So other than that, though, I just kind of let things go. It really is like a puzzle. I really enjoy, it's like putting together a documentary. I really enjoy taking all the interviews and kind of cutting them together to tell the story. It's really fun. I very much enjoy not only reading, but making oral histories, and I'd like to make more. So yeah, it's a fun process.
I mean, first of all, RIP to that kid who couldn't talk to anybody about Godzilla. That's a very sad story. But thank you.
Head exploded. I'd love to
see it. It was in the news. Report. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was,
yeah. All right. I'll Google it.
There was some sensitive stuff about it on Twitter, though.
But I don't know if you refer to this as spoilers when you're talking necessarily about this book, but since there are a lot of questions about the future of Comic-Con and where those things are going, whatever you feel comfortable sharing, I'd be interested to hear what you think the future of a Comic-Con is in general, particularly as here in New York, we're on the cusp of New York Comic-Con, and there's a lot of questions about that.
Sure. Well, one thing is you got to remember another thing that makes San Diego unique is that it's a nonprofit and always has been. So San Diego has some advantages that, like a New York Comic Con that's corporate run and repop and everything, like there's certain kinds of things that they have to deal with that San Diego does not have to deal with. Obviously, there's also downsides for them being a nonprofit right. and not having that corporate support that that Repop has and that some of the other larger conventions have that are corporate run. Like anything else, you know, having that corporate support there is helpful and hurtful at the same time. It can lead to making your Batgirl movie that you've always wanted to make for $90 million, but it can also lead to, you know what, we're not going to put it out. We're not even going to tell you about it. Ah. So, you know, so it's like, what are you going to do? But the point of story is that, you know, so San Diego is different in that regard. So I don't know if you can compare it to what might go on with the future of New York or even any other convention that's of its size and nonprofit. That's another thing that makes San Diego extremely unique. It's supposedly supposed to be, you know, fan made and fan run. And that's the nonprofit aspect. Obviously, even with nonprofits, and as we know with any nonprofits, especially large ones, there's, you know, there's people making money and there's things going on behind the scenes, and it is what it is. It's business in America or the world at all today. It's all venal and corrupt. That's the point of it. But you know, San Diego at least has this patina of, you know, volunteerism and the nonprofit aspect and so forth. So, you know, from what I understand and what I know, I would say that we'll see what happens over the next couple of years, and they'll probably make some decisions based on a couple more. I mean, this was a very strange summer, and even the New York one coming, like it's still kind of right off of the pandemic. I have an older book of mine that came out during the pandemic that is now being re-released as a paperback, and the publisher outright said, let's see what happens post-pandemic. And I have a few other friends whose publishers with books are doing the exact same thing. We see that they're re-releasing movies in the theater. You know, I think that they still are going to need to and want to experiment for another season or two before they make any drastic decisions. And I think San Diego is no different. Obviously, the dent in their financial place was rough to deal with, as was certain reputation problems and certain losses of partners and things. Just the fact that during the virtual time, a lot of companies like Disney and DC, you know, decided to start doing their own virtual events, and we don't really need San Diego. Now, DC closed their down, from what I understand, but, you know, Disney's still going to keep doing its thing. Other brands and streaming services and studios are going to start doing their own thing more and more. They're not going to need San Diego as that centerpiece anymore, maybe. Or they'll find in the next year or two more and more people coming back to it, and they're realizing, oh, shoot, we do need to play nice with those guys and go back there. So I don't think anyone can or will know for at least another year or two to see what really happens when this last convention season, the one we're in now, is still an asterisk. It's still not real. We can't really tell yet. It's not a controlled experiment. So it we're still like, dealing with that. Yeah.
It feels like everybody just wants more and more. Like the fact that like the earnings call for all these big media corporations are like news. It's like a big news item. And it's like the earnings call where they talk to their investors. So it feels like eventually, this is me just spitballing, they will have to just be everywhere. And San Diego will continue to be its hub, but everyone wants news more and more.
Yeah, I mean, I think also, and this is a good thing, and I've been saying this since day one, and it's something that I've really always written a lot about and fought for and been very vocal about, especially since I've been a bit of a nomad since leaving LA in 2009. I've lived all over the country, and aside from New York a few times, it was mostly in the Midwest area with smaller, typically college towns, but still smaller towns in different places. And I would always get very, very, very involved in that community, and I would push the idea of we need to have these community get-togethers and gatherings, and I'd always try to do special programming at the local movie theaters, and I would try to do theater stuff with the kids in the town, which is something I enjoy doing, and working with different groups and just doing things to have stuff for younger people, to have stuff for older people, to really get everyone together. And it's something I've always enjoyed doing in whatever community I'm in, including where I am now in Dayton. We moved here literally a month before COVID, and I'm always pushing for more community events. And to me, that includes special movie screenings. And I think that more and more people are seeing now and wanting again to be with other people out in the world. I think we're going to start seeing, you know, I could be wrong, I know commutes are awful. They really are. But I think we're going to start seeing more and more people wanting to go back to the office just to be around other people, to commiserate in the lunchroom. Look, with work from home, you can't unionize as easily. There's not as much trust. You're not looking at the person in the eye, even when you're doing stuff over Zoom. This has a lot of effect over how labor disputes are handled and things, which is something I think a lot of people forget about or don't think about. When you're all working from home, it's harder to consolidate concerns or whatnot in a way that you feel safe, because when you're mediated through a screen or Slack, obviously, you're never going to feel comfortable not really great. Speaking your mind.
So I tried to form a union with my dog and two daughters, and we're not getting anywhere.
I'm just saying, I think more people are going to want to go back to the office. More people are going to want to go to the movie theater. More people are going to want to go to conventions, because that's how we are. We are social creatures. We really are. And we want to get out. We want to be around. And kids especially. I mean, so many of them went through, that was a horrific period for them as far as the isolation, and it raised suicide levels and everything else. And kids want to go out and experience these things. They haven't gotten to. There are kids who are, you know, 3 or 4 years old during COVID, and now they're like 7 or 8 or 6 or 7, and they can really remember and see if they go to Comic-Con now. They can really see it for the first time. So I hope families will consider that, and you know, we need to be together. So I think that the convention scene is going to hopefully continue being strong and get stronger. It just, again, might take some time, but we'll see. But it's hard, you know. So it all comes down to money and reputation and what partners are going to be involved or not being involved. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, listen, I know we're going to have to let you go in a second, but the book is out now?
The book is out. Yeah, it came out September 6th. Right. And there's also an audiobook version that came out, I think, last week. But the book is out. As I tell people, please support your local bookstore, support your local comic book store, and still leave a review on Amazon, because the more of those we get, the more it pushes the recommendation algorithm. And apparently you can talk about this, and I'm going to, and I don't care, because, you know, it's a terrible system the way that it works. But we have to play in the game. As Tupac said, you can't be an angel in hell. So get it at your local bookstore, comic book shop, help them out, but still put a review on Amazon, because that helps us
That's
out.
Great.
We all have to play that evil video game.
Love it. Matthew, congratulations on the book. It is phenomenal. Cool. I can't wait for everybody to check it out if they haven't already. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Have a good rest of your
day. Share or your heads will explode is the takeaway.
Yeah. Bye.
All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called See You at San Diego, an Oral History of Comic-Con Fandom and the Triumph of Geek Culture. As mentioned, it is out now from Fantagraphics.
It's really fun to not only look at, but to kind of like just experience. I mean, the stuff before your time, it's crazy to kind of see pictures of young.
And Pete, when you say that, that's just like the first section for you, right? It's before your time.
for anybody who is as old as I am, you motherfucker.
Exactly. You got the two old ones. Let me say real quick. This book reminds me of when we were at New York Comic Con doing interviews, and I sat down with Neil Gaiman, and as Alex says, hearts literally hovered over my head while I was doing it. But he looked out, and before we were even rolling on the interview, he was like, he's looked at the crowd from the skybox below, and he's like, this is what we always wanted. This is what Alan and I and others were first getting together, this is what, beyond our wildest dreams, this is what we fantasized it could be. and to see it now. And I feel like if that quote, since it was just said to me, is probably not in this book, but I feel like this book encapsulates that quote.
Yeah. And just to mention, when Neil was looking out, he was watching Pete eating a roast beef sandwich on the con floor. That's what he had already
This is what we imagine.
This is over there, Pete, that guy.
He was like, Pete in the bathroom line.
Pete in the bathroom line.
Like, classic Neil Gaiman, calling people sloppy sons of bitches.
That's right. But,
it's his quote. It's on the back of a lot of his books.
I know. I remember that in Sandman. All right. Why don't we bring in our next two guests? We are welcome them back to the show to once again talk about Alliances. This time it is a graphic novel form called Alliances Orphans. It's coming out from Dynamite. Ryan Silbert and Luke Lieberman, everybody. Luke is here first. Hello, Luke. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Right. Good to see you. While we're waiting for Ryan to make his way in, I hear you are heading off to Bulgaria very soon. Is that correct?
Yeah, Sunday. I'm going back. I was there for the beginning of the shoot. We're shooting Red Sonja in Eastern Europe. I was there for the beginning of the shoot, and now I'm going back for the last 2 weeks while we kind of wrap out.
And you're playing Red Sonja in the movie, right?
Yeah. They only needed me for a few weeks on either side.
Doesn't seem important. You're sort of as, you know. Yes. Well, that is very cool. Now that Riot is here as well. Hello. Welcome, guys. Great to have you back. Great to talk about this. So there's been a bunch of different iterations of Alliances at this point. You've had a couple of novels, you've had audiobooks, but I believe this is the first time, and we talked about this the last time you guys were on, but I believe this is the first time it's actually in comic book form, which Woo-hoo! Given it started with Stan Lee and then working its way back to comics, this feels like kind of a homecoming in a way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, at the time, you know, when we were, if Stan didn't want to begin this in comics, obviously something he easily could have done, but he had a lot of experience in that media and wanted to try something different, which is why we started out with Audible as an audiobook. But after doing a couple books with Audible, it just felt right. There's a particular story in there that the prologue is something we wrote with Stan, and it's it was sort of the genesis of this whole universe. Like, that scene is kind of the first sort of kernel that we created with him, and it just felt it was, first of all, it's also a story that demanded visual storytelling. I mean, it's a very big, sort of cosmic, sort of bombastic, colorful story with those kind of characters, so it kind of demanded it. But yeah, it also just kind of felt like kind of time to come home.
Yeah. Now, before we get too into it, there is one thing that I wanted to mention to you guys that you did not create. We have a CBC chef, our comic book club chef, Brett Macris. He Stray Bullets. Every Stray once bullies. In a while, he creates a drink based on some of our guests. And he did create one this week that I wanted to share with you guys. I'm going to bring it up here. It is called The Orphan, or The Orphans. Maybe Stray Bullet can clarify. But I'll read it off to anybody listening to the audio podcast.
Yes.
So it's Bourbon, Campari, Contreau, Squeeze Lemon, 2 dashes of Peychaud's Bitters, 2 to 3 inch sprigs of rosemary, and a lemon peel. And I'll read the description that he wrote here. Much like the characters, this cocktail is based upon these ingredients. Must become a family to save the very fabric of reality. Maybe not that dramatic, but this is an awesome cocktail based around 4 characters in Ryan Silbert and Luke Lieberman's newest work, Alliances Orphans.
Autocorrect there.
Yes. For Rascal, the self-loather of dark secrets. Campari for Critter, equal part monster and puppy. Contreau for Hive, the childlike leader.
So
and
cute.
A smoking rosemary sprig for Haze, the guy most made of vapor. So there you go. Very delicious cocktail created for all of you. And for all of you out there, if you'd like to check it out, he always drops this on our Patreon Slack, patreon.com/comicbookclub. But there you go. Feel free to make yourself the orphans or the orphan.
My heart is warm by this because I started working in spirits. So I love this. I just love it.
Nice. Another homecoming.
Yeah, you might see tears coming out of my eyes, but let me just, can you see?
little bourbon rosemary tears.
Well, so talk about this book then a little bit. Let's say for people who have never checked out Alliances before, none of the novels, none of the audiobooks or anything, I think from having read it, this book really stands on its own as its own adventures and characters. Obviously, it's helped if you know what's come before, but what can people expect? What's sort of the setup for the world as you're going into this graphic novel?
Well, we were very conscious, actually, that we want new readers to be able to come in without having a PhD in the Alliance's universe and be able to just sort of roll in and enjoy the story. The basic setup is that there's an inventor who he's been captured by the Hive. He's been enslaved by them and makes them weapons that they use to take over the galaxy. He turns his greatest weapon against them and uses it to wipe them out. And then he pieces out with that weapon. Later, ultimately, you find, if you know more about the universe, that he's hiding out on Earth with his ultimate weapon. This is about what happens to the rest of the universe, because there's this massive power vacuum. And he's left all of these inventions behind. And whoever gets their hands on them ultimately will control the fate of the galaxy. And the thing about the inventor is he's sort of irresponsible. You know, he's a bit of the absent-minded professor. So he just makes shit up and creates stuff. Mm-hmm. And doesn't really think through what's going to be done with his creations once he's done with them. So In the center of this story is the center of every galaxy. There's a supermassive black hole. And he was mining the energy from the quasar that's emitted from that black hole so greedily that he creates a feedback loop that destabilizes the black hole and threatens the fabric of space-time in the galaxy. Let me know if you've heard one of these before.
if this was a movie, we would have a stack of papers and a pencil, and we would just poke it through the paper.
Yeah,
that's basically 100.
Right. We'd say something like, whoa, English, please.
Yeah.
Something
yeah.
like that. Good.
Yeah. But the idea is that as the Hive would wipe out a planet, they would keep one specimen. Like one kind of unique specimen from the species.
That's cool.
You know, so each of the orphans is the last of their kind. They're a lone survivor, and they've been sort of cobbled together into this found family that ultimately sort of has to band together to save us all.
Yeah. Right. For us, it's like, you know, these adventure stories are like you were saying before about how we came out of the audio. Like so much of like for us, the Alliance's universe is like an homage, but it's also like a love letter to like all of the mediums that informed, you know, comic book storytelling where we are today. So it's like a throwback in a way, but it moves us a little bit forward. And it's why, like, I don't know, when I met Nick at Dynamite through Luke, because Luke's been publishing with him for many years, it's like, it's such a perfect kind of relationship to have to release something like this, because, you know, Nick is a huge history buff of comics, and like you kind of have to know where we've been to know where we're going, and that's sort of like what this is about for us is, like, you know, if you love comics at any stage of the last 100 years, this should feel, you know, like something special.
Yeah, this was kind of, you know, our sort of anchor for this, or our true north was, you know, Tales of Suspense, Journey into Mystery, like those kind of yarns. That's kind of where we wanted, you know, where we wanted as kind of a starting point for this.
What
was it, since ahead, you moved through the different sort of mediums coming to comics, how did each one inform the comic and sort of going forward, like where your next move is when it comes to where are you going to be on, like stone tablets, holograms, like we'll see.
Well, we're already deep into the stone tablet market.
Right. Smart.
We're an early
mover. Stands the test of time.
Perfect. Yeah.
I mean,
stone tablet so hot, right? So hot.
So hot right now.
So hot right now.
Yes, yeah. We have a special foil edition.
Well, you know, if you open up,
triple gatefold is really hard to do.
In here, there is some foil. I mean, we have to pay some love to the 90s.
Yeah. The original idea when we started out in audio is that Stan wanted he wanted to create this kind of rapport with the listener where they could close their eyes and sort of become their own artist and be their own Ditko or Kirby, you know, in sort of imagining the story. This one, we were pretty far out there, especially visually. And that's why, I mean, Sliman, I'm going to butcher. Yeah. who did the art through the sort of meat of the book, just did an amazing job of kind of giving the character's heart. And Bill Sienkiewicz, he had the kind of...
Yeah, sorry, can I just stop there for a second? Because I don't think people know. I mean, not to downplay the main bulk of the book, which is really good sci-fi art, but your prologue is done by Bill Sienkiewicz, who's a living legend. So that's cool.
Amazing, yeah.
Well, but, you know, that was, and that was kind of part of what made it make sense for us to bring this into comics was that, you know, when Bill got on board, it was kind of like, you know, now we knew we had somebody who could go out there in your wildest imagination, because that's what Bill has. He has a wild imagination, and that's what is sort of required by the sort of scale and strangeness of this book, you know, that we wanted somebody who could frankly, we wanted somebody who give us something we couldn't imagine. Right. I mean, we already had something that was pretty far out there, and we wanted someone who could come up with something that we wouldn't have even thought of. And Bill's I mean, I don't think he can help but be original, you know, by the nature of his art.
I did want to ask Luke, obviously you've been working at Dynamite, but Ryan, I believe this is your first comic book as a fellow brought up from mint condition in Port Washington person to now getting to create your comic book. How does that feel?
Pete and Justin are so tired of hearing about the condition.
I know. You guys.
a store, one they cannot visit. Two, there are no photos of.
Well, but going from like comic book
fan. Tell me more about this Port Washington culture experience that you guys
have. We're very close to the North Shore Animal League. You got Publishers Clearinghouses right there. Sands Point Preserve, very fun.
Wow, giant check market, huge.
Great Gatsby.
We're the mayors on Foursquare of Port Washington, if you're on that. I never thought I would like ever be able to create a comic book. Like, I was just listening to Matthew talk, and like, you know, I had a fanzine growing up that I created like on Prodigy, you know, like with just
people. I was on Prodigy.
Oh, good. Maybe you were one of the contributing writers.
I was Speedball was my name. So if that is.
Oh, you were not... on the C. Were you on CCC?
I think I was, yes.
Yeah, so you were Speedball there? Okay, so I was Venom. But, you know, we'll find out.
Holy shit. Like, I don't think that corner of the internet exists anymore, but I feel like we spoke to each other.
We 100% did. So Prodigy was a big inspiration. We'll talk about that in a little bit of different conversation. Prodigy was an actual inspiration for Alliances in New Reality when we talk about these digital Atlantis type, like, internet forums that could exist and then disappear, right? Like sink into the ocean. So that's something that William Ackerson, who's in Orphans, created. And it's this idea of like you can create something that can just disappear in the digital age. And this is something that lives with William and guilt throughout Orphans. But in terms of just making a comic book, I mean, it's huge. Like, I mean, I met Luke at Comic-Con. So listening to like this thing about Matthew talk about, you know, the way how important Comic-Con is, it's like vital to my whole life. And then to be able to make it with Dynamite is like so like unbelievable, and to make it with Bill, who, you know, is an incredible artist, who was my first exposure to comic books was like Batman 400. So it's like, you know, his cover, and it's just like, it's a dream, man, right? Like, it's just, there's no complaints here. And, you know, Dynamite and that whole team brought their such an incredible amount of care to the project, knowing that it was like one of Stan's last, and like, you know, they have a long history with Luke, and like everything was about quality. And I think that was something that, you know, when you physically can hold a book, you'll see it's like, it's a different kind of graphic novel, which I'm pretty happy about. So, yeah, I mean, it shows that you can be a fan one day and be a, you know, creator 30 years later.
Speaking of being a fan, first off, this is really not only beautiful, we're talking about how awesome it is, but it's epic, and it really does do a great job of bringing to this other world and kind of making you a part of everything. It feels so epic and space-like. I was really impressed. For you, what was your favorite part to see or to kind of put together? You know, after a comic book is made and you get to hold it in your hands, what were some of your kind of like favorite moments along this ride?
See, Ryan has his. I haven't gotten to hold this in my hands yet. I'm going to get, I think literally when we do our signing at Midtown Comics on Friday is the first time I'm actually going to get the whole
Midtown Comics, baby.
Wait, on Friday? So you're going to Bulgaria and then you're coming back?
No, I'm going to Bulgaria on Sunday.
Oh, okay. All right. Just try to get the time.
Alex, he sent his itinerary. Like,
I'm so sorry.
No, I can't wait to. This is one I you know.
I mean, switch you to a window seat if that's okay. I'm sorry. I just wanted you to be able to look out.
It's it's business class only, man, for international travel. As important as it is to make these books for like readers and other people, I almost felt like I was sort of making this for myself. Like, I really just want to copy myself. Like, I really just want one that goes on my shelf. And if you're asking me, like, my favorite part of it is probably the end. The end was kind of the thing that I was sort of the proudest of. And also, Sleeman did a job because, you know, when you write the script for something like that, and it's like, here's a massive piece of technology wrapped around a quasar coming out of a black hole, you know, and I'm not going to go any further into it than that, but it's like someone who really nails it, like, and manages to get all the character emotions, and there's a, you know, it's, you know, a moment of high tension, and they really managed to bring it home. I was very gratified by that. And obviously I like the prologue too, because that's,
Given that you are seeing it in literally graphic form with the graphic novel, assuming at some point you're going to go back to prose, potentially audiobooks, something like that, how does that change it now that you've actually seen what these characters look like and what this world looks like in a physical artistic form?
Ryan, I'm gonna let you.
Well, we saved basically a bunch of characters that have not been rendered fully, so we still have a bunch that we have yet to see, so we're excited about that and finding other, you know, artists and collaborating with people like Sleeman and Bill who can like bring those to life. But I think what I think is cool about it is because we are independent in the way we were approaching it, like we're really flexible with what we can do, right? So we can like throw something down into an audio drama, we can make it into a prose novel, we may want to do something as a comic book and make it so that it doesn't have to feel like this dense, like Luke was saying, PhD, like interact, like it shouldn't feel that way. And also, you know, we came out of that age, we're in the 90s where like there was always like a new universe or whatever, you know, like, and it's like, you know, that sometimes was like rushed to, it's like new universe, 16 titles, here you go, have fun. And it's like in foil. And it's like, for us, it's very, we want to be very slow with it. We have a lot of material that we want to unveil in a very thoughtful way. So yeah, I mean, the exciting part is to find the mediums and the great partners to work with, like Dynamite and Audible.
But we did take a chapter from New Reality, Trick of Light. Our first project was audio and then also a full novel. The second project that Will Wheaton read for us, New Reality at Audible, hasn't been in prose form yet. So we took our favorite chapter, which is also basically where one of the main characters in the graphic novel gets his powers. And that's an extra on the back of the graphic novel. So that's there for you. And that's prose. Yeah.
Awesome. Nice. Well, what is the future of this universe then? Whatever you can talk about.
Ryan, you want to hit it?
Well, man, I mean, I feel like this is like a lucky, I should call out my lotto number here, because last time I was going to make a comic book and then like, you know,
then it happened.
Then I got a couple other things. And yeah, there was a comic book in front of us. You look, we've got a big announcement coming at the panel on Thursday. Yeah. But you know, you can imagine we're going to explore different corners of this universe and then go deeper into all of those. So it's really like opening up, different kinds of corners of it. So we've been in the cosmic, we've been in the street level, you know, there's lots of other kinds of, you know, supernatural and, you know, more young and fun type places to go.
The story is going to both, like, we're going to drive the narrative forward because there's more story to tell and sort of the core through line of the narrative, and then we're also just going to expand out, and every once in a while, I mean, as you expand, sometimes there's opportunities to go back and kind of explore a little backstory here and there. And you know, I mean, the nice thing about one, having all this development that we did with Stan, and two, like being our own masters and having, you know, ownership and control over the universe, is that we can kind of pick and choose which stories we want to tell in which mediums and at which times. And, you know, I mean, Orphans was a lot of work. So we have, you know, our announcements that we're going to make. And then there's also part of me that's just kind of like, you know, we just sort of finished this story and like we kind of know what the next stories are because they're something we developed years ago, but like now we have to actually kind of build those houses, you know, like we have
this is
now we have to go get our hammer and nail and build them, you know.
Well, this is a long way of saying we're going to become stonemasons. That's where Luke is going. Yeah, stonemasonry. And just
great training.
That's where the tablets come in.
Start going to knocking them out.
Amazing, guys! Congratulations on the book. Congrats. Very excited for everybody to check it out, and congratulations on the big announcements coming this weekend at New York Comic Con. Good seeing you again.
Thank you so much.
See you guys too.
We'll see always you on, to see on you. Prodigy. We'll see you on Prodigy.
Yeah, I mean, this is true. I don't know how we would ever track this down, but we have spoken in the.
You know what?
I'm going to find you. Grendel is also out there right now.
Go check out.
I definitely remember talking to that person.
Was it a person? Okay.
That's what we are understanding. This is going to fuck me up for a long
time. Before we fuck it up further, thanks so much for coming on, guys. We'll check you later.
See you guys.
Bye.
All right, there we go. Once again, it is called Alliances Orphans from Ryan Silbert and Luke Lieberman. You can check it out from Dynamite. And we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
All right.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question and ask a question here on Crowdcast or in the comments over on YouTube, and we will get right on them. But first, guys, we have a sponsor on this week's episode.
Whoa,
can you believe it? This week's episode is sponsored by Just Forget About It. The podcast is hosted by a group of friends who started talking about random scenarios during car shares and wanted to bring their wild conversations to the world. Have you ever wanted to visit a real-life Jurassic Park? What would you do if aliens invaded or there was a zombie apocalypse? What is the best thing since sliced bread? Just Forget About It. Talks about random what-if scenarios as if they're real. But here's something that is very real. You can find Just Forget About It on pretty much all major podcasting platforms. Apple, Google, Castro, Overcast, and Spotify. It's hosted on Podvine. Don't you forget about it. Just forget about it.
Nice.
I don't know. I didn't nail that one. I wrote that one as well. I don't know if you guys could tell.
You did great. I like when you were pointing.
Signature Zalbin in there. Yeah.
Thanks. Speaking of signature Zalbin, let's talk about tonight's signature cocktails. First of all, thank you to Brett Macris for that one.
Sorry, bullies.
But what are we drinking tonight, fellas? Justin?
I'll shout it out. I'm drinking two great New York State beers that I really like. This Ruby Red Kolsch from Genesee. This is like a soda. It tastes like a soda. It's very good.
A soda?
It's the closest to Alex's pumpkin spice shit that I can ever get. And I did it for Alex. And then, of course, you got the Pils Mafia. Thin Man Brewery.
He's a Bills fan, so you see what he did Pils. There.
This is, I mean, I am a Bills fan.
A heck of a game.
Great game against the Ravens. This is my brother great Pilsner. He was?
Ooh. Yeah.
He was probably rooting for the wrong team.
No, he was rooting for the right team, dude. He went all Bills gear.
My man.
Rolling deep, yeah.
It's weird that you're a Giants fan. We can talk about this later.
All right, you're losing.
Come on. This is a great Pilsner, no matter what football team you root for. Or none at all.
Pete, what are you checking? Wow, what's going on there?
I got I went to my local beer place that wasn't douchey.
Oh, and this is not the place that scares you into buying beer.
No, that was in West Philadelphia, where I wasn't born or raised. This is in Beemore.
Peanut butter milkshake Pilsner or whatever.
It's called Bail Money, and it's quite delicious. It's at first I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna like this, but the more I drink it, the more I'm like, man, this is wild.
Interesting. Yeah. I am drinking a Basil Hayden's dark rye that I've been kind of obsessed with the past week. It's very fancy.
I love it. Alex is entering his Hemingway phase.
I think so. I've been my stupid October project. I don't think I could do like 31 scary movies in 31 days, but I'm very much enjoying when I have a free night, just pour myself like two fingers of Basil Hayden's, watch a spooky movie. feel like adult.
Do three, bro. Don't mess around.
Oh, he's just doing two fingers at a time. You know he's coming back for more.
Yeah, when I say two fingers, it's just a splash of rye because otherwise I'll fall asleep and I stick my fingers in it to stir it up.
Are the fingers going this way or are they two fingers this way?
That's not the way I'm drinking. Let's not, yeah.
Like this.
Now, Alex, no one suggested.
let's not make it too weird.
All right, we got a question here. This is from Kevin. Hey. What's something you've never seen an oral history of but really want to? Great question.
Comic book club, I guess, is the number one. Sure. I guess we're sort of always doing an oral history.
100%.
We are an oral history.
Yes.
That's interesting.
There's been so many oral histories. It's tough to call, but
I would like to, you know, just for selfish reasons, love to hear like an oral history of Rochester, learn some more new things about the place that I was born and raised. It would be fun. Cause there's a lot of crazy quirks.
This is one that exists, but live from New York, the SNL oral history is awesome. It is great so read. Good. Great read. Yeah.
But I sort of right next door to that, I would throw out an oral history of like the New York comedy scene. Like when we were coming up with the sort of everything that was happening at UCB and all of the talent spinning out of just New York in general.
Well, that was a tough thing. There was this like improv like comedy scene thing being made. This like kind of documentary thing. And then the guy ended up getting like hired by at UCB and the whole thing kind of got tweaked.
You're talking about Nate Dern, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I would love an oral history of the guy who was trying to do an oral history and then got shut down by UCB.
He didn't get shipped out.
That's a story.
He took over as artistic director and then now he writes for the Tonight Show. So that's,
yeah, I mean, he's killing the game, but I mean, it was like,
that's a great title. Killing the game.
Yeah.
The inside story.
Alex, you're a character in this, no doubt.
Ooh,
you were the AD at AD at the Pit. That's a spot, man. You saw it all. And running Sketchfest?
Oh, the stories I could tell.
Yeah.
And I've often told
the oral history of Elephant Larry.
Sure. Why not? All right, we got one from Stray Bullet here. The major holidays are coming quick. One holiday has to go. Which one? No judgments. Ooh.
Wait, we're getting rid of a holiday?
Yeah, we're getting rid of a holiday. Valentine's Tell you what, Day. I'll get rid of Hanukkah. Here's the thing. Hanukkah is totally fine. I have a nice time, but it's not as big of a deal as it's supposed to be, or the pressure people are like, you're celebrating Hanukkah, right? And I'm like, sure, I'm having some vodkas or whatever.
Well, yeah.
For example, tonight is Yom Kippur. I'm not supposed to eat. I'm having a big old glass of rye.
Well, that's not really a meal.
You don't disrespect the Yom Kips like that, bro. Come on, man.
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
The Yom Kips?
Yeah, Pete, I'll see you at shul later, right?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Pete and I are doing Tashlich tomorrow. He knows what
that is. Alex, there was a audience question on our Slack.
You haven't answered which holiday you'd get rid of.
I did answer, but you guys don't care. So. I said Valentine's Day.
Oh, nice.
I think we're talking about Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Christmas.
It said New holidays, Year's. And so I went with the most
I guess I'd get rid of Arbor Day while we're cheating.
There we go. There's nothing wrong with cheating. It's not cheating.
I love holidays. I think more. I say we need more. But if I'm going to get rid of one, I would say New Year's Day. That's a fake one. It's weird that we have New Year's
No,
Day.
We need that day, dude. You need that day to pull yourself back together, try to figure out who you are.
I disagree. I think we would be able to connect and tell more crazy stories if we all had to go do stuff on our hungover day.
No way. Don't make me do stuff when I'm hungover. That's not cool.
Pete, you got a question from the Patreon Slack. Hit us up.
I do. Yeah. So Jake, who's not from State Farm, asks, kids, what movies did you guys remember being unreasonably scared by? My answer is Roger Rabbit, because Christopher Lloyd's eyes haunted me for many years as a child, really fucked my shit up, and that's my answer.
So I just got to write down "send Pete eyeballs in the mail."
Oh man,
just to really scare the shit out of him. There's the instant answer for me is the movie "Nothing But Trouble," which was like very weird comedy that like Dan Aykroyd is in and a bunch of other like people, random people.
Oh, dude, is
the two giant babies?
Oh my god, yeah, dude,
terrifying as
that whole sausage thing really fucked me up too when they're eating those.
The two I'll throw out there, which are actually probably very similar, one very specifically the Wheelers from Return to Oz,
scary,
very
the scary. the desert the Wheelers like were a little cause for concern, but the desert that turned you into sand, I was terrified of sand.
Yeah, I didn't like that. Wow. But the other one, which I mentioned the other day to my family, they're like, what are you talking about? Because we too much, but I was telling them about Superbad 3, the end of Superbad 3, the robot lady.
Great answer. Also, that when that computer sucks in that lady, I was like, I'm gonna have to quit my Prodigy BB with my man Venom and Grendel over there, because that was scary.
Yeah, I told my wife about that, and I was like, you were probably scared too. And she's like, well, my dad worked on computers, so it wasn't a big deal for me. And I was like, all right.
Wow. Yeah, she had a lot of relatives.
I like how you're
computers all the time.
Marnie flexed on you. She was like, my dad works on computers. So like,
grow up, Alex. Yeah.
Get it together.
All right.
We got a great question here in the comments on Crowdcast from Have You Nerd. I love when we learn random facts that need to even that surprise even you guys, like Pete's volleyball career. Also, very true. What is something learned years after knowing each other that blew your mind? I mean, Pete is a never-ending font of crazy nonsense that I'm like, you did what? Talking when the Costa Rica story that you tell. The story with your friend whose name is like the extreme vegan dream.
The unseen vegan dream.
Unseen vegan dream and all that.
Didn't you tell a story also about seeing a real ghost?
Yep.
That was in the past couple of years. I remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go. All of Pete's stories.
the answer is all of Pete's stories.
And we are going to move on with our next section, which is trivia, and for that we're going to turn over to Pete LePage.
All righty.
Peter J. LePage.
I like how you're putting the J on it. All right. Hey guys, this is the part where we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a Midtown Comics gift card.
Or a Long John Silver's gift card.
Oh, that's right. My bad. Yeah, you have the choice. And choices are important. We're looking for, unless we have a selected somebody, we're looking for a first hand up person, a brave volunteer, whether you're on the tube or the cast, you know, either way, we're looking for somebody to be brave enough to take this.
Volunteer here. All right, gonna bring you on in. Have You Nerd to do trivia, and again, this is gonna be for your choice. Hello, how are you?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, so this is for your choice of either a Midtown Comics gift card or a Long John Silver's gift card. Your choice. You can let us know at the end.
Yeah, you can think about it. You can think about it for
me. All right.
I'll think about it.
Okay, all right. Take it away, Pete.
All right, today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Coolio, R.I.P. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go, question number one. According to Newsarama's best powerless superheroes list of all time, who is number 9? Is it A, Lex Luthor, B, The Punisher, or C, Vivica A. Fox? So it's either A, why would I put that in there, or it's B, The Punisher.
Because
you are correct, sir.
Wow, number 9? Number 9, not great showing.
No. Hey, come on, dude, top 10?
Yeah, you're right.
Pretty good. I thought it was pretty good. Made the top 10. All right, here we go. Question number 2. What is the name of the new on-demand comics printing service? Is it A, WeHateTrees.org, or is it B, GC Press, or is it C, Stoogie Kenyatta? So it's either A, which I made up, or it's B, the GC Press.
B, the GC Press.
That's right.
Yes.
All right, here we go. Nice. Last one. Who is joining Cap in the new Captain America Cold War crossover event? Is it A, Steve Jensen, B, Emma Frost, or C, Jeep Swenson? So A or C I made up. B is an actual character.
Oh, B then. Sorry.
B is correct.
Yes.
Emma Frost teams up with Captain America. I'll go see how that works. But it's Cold War. You get it? Because Frost.
Okay, yeah.
Well, congratulations. Sense. You did it. Would you like a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics to get some comics or a $25 gift card to Long John Silver's to get some fish?
I'll take the fries. Midtown Comic. I don't got a lot of Long John Silver around.
All right, fair enough. Email us at comicbookclublive@gmail.com with your name and info, and we will get that off to you. And do you have a guess as to what the secret Coolio movie was that Pete was hinting at?
I can't even think of Vivica Fox and Coolio together, and I don't remember.
That's right, together.
It sounds like a beautiful dream.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
All right, what is it?
It is the 1997 movie Batman and Robin.
Oh, shoot.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. Coolio is in that?
Coolio is in that.
Was he Batman or Robin in that?
He was a banker. He was in the bank when it was robbed.
That's right. All right, there we go. Thanks for coming on. Have a good night.
Take care. Later, man.
All right. As we all know, comics are cool and they're coming out all the time. Justin, what are you looking forward to that's coming out this week?
Oh, well, let me have a look. How many comics are we talking about this week on the stack? All the fuck of them, you psychopath?
Yeah, seriously, bro.
Wait, can we talk about this here? I just want to mention this. So I sent the comics in advance for the stack so we could read through them. I don't know if you guys know this, but it actually emails me when you download them, when you download the comics. So I know when you start reading them. So Pete, I just wanted to check in. Based on when you downloaded, I calculated that by the time the show hits, you would have needed to have read one comic every 7 minutes without stopping for breaks. Mm-hmm. How'd that go?
It went good, man. You know, I made it. I'm here at the show.
Well,
I'm ready
really
to talk comics. So really I'm glad that you're doing extra math. I don't know how much free time you have.
I was worried. That's why I was worried. That's all.
Mm-hmm. I want to give it up for, I really like this Miracle Man number 0 comic that came out from Marvel. Jumping around, Neil Gaiman does the first, or sort of the wraparound story. And the Miracle Man sort of universe is something that I feel like Marvel keeps flirting with really doing more of and doesn't ever really do it. And again, this feels like maybe a half step toward actually doing something, but I'm looking forward to potentially more of that. And
I'm looking forward to talking to you more about that on the stack because I have questions.
Oh, great. That's what a great tease for the stack. Pete's going to ask me questions.
Pete, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to Kaya number 1 as well as Gotham City Year 1 number 1.
Exciting. I'm going to give a shout out to Dark Ride number 1 from Image Comics. This is reuniting Joshua Williamson and Andre Bresson from Birthright. Love that book. Very excited.
One of my favorite books.
Book, yeah. Birthright.
This is about a horror theme park. They tease this in the Image Comics 30th anniversary anthology that's going on. Story there. So I was pretty hyped to get into this and excited to talk to you guys about that book and other books on the Stack Podcast, which rolls out in the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated stack feed Wednesday at 9 a.m. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Ryan Silbert and Luke Lieberman coming on, talking about Alliance's Orphans out from Dynamite. Also, Matthew Klickstein. Check out Fantagraphics. See you at San Diego. An oral history of Comic-Con fandom and the triumph of geek culture, which is out now. Next week, Dennis Robinson is going to be here to talk about Lycan, Solomon's Odyssey, and Matt Wisniewski is going to be here to talk about Faceless and the Family. Bunch of other podcasts to pug. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. is recapping She-Hulk Weekly. We may have two episodes this week with She-Hulk and Werewolf by Night, so that should be fun. Also, the Doom Room, our Doom Patrol podcast, out weekly. On Thursdays, the Umbrella Podcademy, our Umbrella Academy podcast, starting to wrap up the season on Mondays. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Support this podcast and all the podcasts we do. You can subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you on Prodigy Bulletin.
Like, does that part of the internet still exist? Like, is it out there? It's not, right?
It's not, right? It's
got to find you, though. They can find you. They know what you need.